in that they need to get out of their comfort zone. But you also need to be willing to try things that are uncertain. And I think what we like is comfort, but what we thrive on is certainty. And if you allow yourself a little bit of discomfort, you still might want to hold on to that certainty. But you need to be willing to try things that are uncertain when there is potential for massive success.
You're listening to Be That Lawyer, life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Each episode, your host, author, and lawyer coach, Steve Fritzen, will take a deeper dive, helping you grow your law practice in less time with greater results. Now, here's your host, Steve Fritzen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Be That Lawyer. I am Steve Fritzen, as the announcer just mentioned. I think you've heard that enough at this point. But hey, listen, it's another beautiful day here in Chicago, interviewing people from around the world, trying to get you the information on how to be that lawyer, someone that's confident, organized, and a skilled rainmaker. And you may not get a better guest than the guy I've got for you today. His name's Ali Awad. He is the CEO lawyer. And this is a story that you're not going to want to miss. So hopefully you got your seatbelt on and you're ready to go for today. How's it going, Ali?
Man, I'm just so happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Yeah, well, I'm jazzed. We had an unbelievable, I think our pre-podcast interview was supposed to go 15 minutes. And I think we talked for 45 because everything you and I talked about just got me more and more jazzed up about having you on the show. And I'm just fascinated. So even just giving your background and your bio is going to blow some people's minds. But if you wouldn't mind doing that, I normally say Reader's Digest version, but I'm going to let you run with it a little bit because it's too cool. So take it away.
All right. My name is Ali Awad, and I am the CEO lawyer. Now I say that I get my clients a wad of money because I'm a car accident attorney. But really what I'm known for is Instagram. I started putting out Instagram content back in 2016, even before I started my law practice. And I just realized that there was a disconnect between professionals and how consumers connect to those professionals. And growing up as an immigrant in the Bible Belt in Dalton, Georgia, in a Muslim household, Arab speaking Muslim household, it was just hard to fit in. So not only do you not feel like you belong in your community, or in your own neighborhood, because everyone is either Mexican or, you know, on the other extreme, super conservative. There's no access to professionals like you would want. And when I realized that there was this gap, like there were these, obviously politicians are huge on social media. There's these doctors that are super famous on social media. There's business gurus, coaches, health, fitness experts, like it, literally almost every other industry has been taken care of on social media, and they've bridged the gap so that people have access to those professionals. And I realized that we needed that in the legal community. So in 2016, after being about being an entrepreneur for 16 years or so, I decided to start the CEO Lawyer page on Instagram. I've been giving out free legal advice and business advice consistently for the past 5 years. And now, you know, I've been blessed to build a law firm that has 40 employees. We're doing 8 figures consistently every year, and it's all been because of social media, just giving people that free legal advice and connecting them to a professional and just being honest and normal. You know, I'm rarely wearing a suit and tie. I don't want people to think I'm a suit and tie guy, and I want you to feel like you have access to me. And I think that's going to be the trend in the future in all industries. And I was just lucky enough to start a little early. So that's the short and skinny about me, but you know, obviously there were 7 different companies before I became an attorney. There were e-commerce businesses, you know, martial arts growing up and becoming a black belt with, you know, 5 siblings and learning how to change tires at the age of 7. And there's just so much other stuff that happened behind the scenes, which is why I feel so thankful and grateful to be able to work with my brain instead of my hands. Because if you work manual labor, you know, it's not sustainable.
And, you know, Lee, a lot of the lawyers that are coming out of law school in the last number of years. And I've talked to some professors, and the professors are saying like they have no knowledge of marketing, no knowledge of business development. Some of them have never used a checkbook, right? They've never written a check. And these are people that are going to now get into the legal space in the business world. And it's going to be very difficult for them to adapt and compete against someone that, like you, who's been an entrepreneur since he's 9 years old and has, you know, has been driven ever since. So what, I mean, what should they be thinking about right now? And I normally wait till the end to give advice or get, you know, closer to it, but I feel like we could just jump right in.
Well, if you're on social media right now and you visit your page and the very first thing is that it's on private and you're in business, that's a problem. It's literally like having a business with the front door locked. So first, if you're trying to get business from social media, make sure your page is on public. Next, if your page is a series of advertisements and every single day or every week you're posting content that doesn't really give value to people, it's more just letting them know that you're here and you're advertising to them. And especially if you're a lawyer, you're like, we'll fight for maximum compensation. No one cares about that shit. So don't post that. You don't go on social media to be advertised to. You go to be entertained first and maybe educated second. So if you can package it up in such a way where you can get people excited to be on your page, now you've got something. And third, finally, once you've created content, a video that captivates your audience, that makes sense, that people actually want to engage with. And I have a secret strategy for how I like to get my videos engaged with. First, the first 3 seconds, I want to grab your attention. So I'm putting my hand out there. I'm using props. I'm doing whatever I can. Stop what you're doing right now and listen, right? We try to get people's attention within the first 3 seconds so they don't bounce off. Second, we try to keep our videos, you know, around the 60-second mark because people have a short attention span. You don't want the videos to be too long. And third, we don't always have a call to action. We just give people the free information. Hey, I'm in the roofing industry and I want to tell you 3 ways that you can increase the longevity of your roof. 1, 2, 3. Or, hey, I'm a car mechanic and a lot of people say that they rotate their tires every 5,000 miles. I'm going to show you the truth about how to get long-term effects from your tires. Whatever it is, give people that value. And the point of that is when you have that good video, don't be afraid to put money behind it. Don't be afraid to run it as an ad, to boost it to your followers and to friends of your followers and to lookalike audiences. Put money behind it, because even with the thousands of videos that I've created, there are a handful that I would call rock star videos. And those are the ones that I'm still running as ads to this day. So those are the 3 things. Make sure your page is not private. It's public and it's a business or a professional profile. Second, make sure that you're creating captivating video content for people, grab their attention. And third, don't be afraid to run it as an ad. That's what you should be doing on your videos. And the more you do it, and by the way, I messed that up a little bit. The second one really is don't advertise, just educate and entertain. But those are the 3 main points. And I think if you look at your page and you audit your Instagram, your Facebook, whatever it is right now, and you realize that you're advertising all the time, your page doesn't have that much activity, that much action, and you're rarely running anything as a sponsored or boosted post, it's no secret why you're not succeeding on Instagram or on Facebook or on TikTok or wherever. It's the same on all social platforms. It's a place to be social, not a place to advertise.
Right. It's called social for a reason. And I think that there's also a difference, and we want to just maybe have a quick conversation about lawyers that are going B2C versus lawyers that are going B2B. So like someone that's dealing with general counsel, someone that's dealing with CEOs of major corporations, or just, you know, people in the mid-market, they might have a totally different strategy or mindset about how they're going to use social media. Can you talk on or touch on that?
Yeah. So obviously Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, these are great for B2C businesses, for business direct to consumer, which is if you're an attorney, a personal injury lawyer, immigration attorney, criminal defense attorney, right? Any one of those industries where you want to go direct to the consumer and you can educate them and get them to hire you for those services, those are great platforms. That doesn't mean you should just forget about LinkedIn. LinkedIn has always been the B2B sort of world. If you are in the corporate world, or if you're a real estate attorney, for instance, and you rely on other agents, real estate agents, to get you those businesses, get you those closings, then you want to educate on LinkedIn. Don't advertise to people. Don't cold message them without having already built some sort of brand recognition. And a great way to do that is if you know who your referral partners are, like you're looking for real estate agents, maybe you can teach them something that no other lawyer has shared with them. Yeah. Like how they can make a little bit more money, like where they can get better quality clients.
That is so spot on, Ali, because they're wondering, the real estate attorneys are wondering, how do I get in front of real estate agents? How do I, you know, network with them? I don't have business to give them, yet I'm asking them to give me business. And if you can do something unique and educate them on something or be a value of, in some other way, that could be the reciprocal point that needs to happen for you to get them on your team.
Look, people do business with those that they know, like, and trust. So they're not going to trust you unless they know you and like you first. The way that you get them to know you is by putting out content that makes them want to engage and actually watch and consume. They're not going to get to know you as easily if all you're doing is just advertising in their face. I read a statistic the other day that there's over 35 or 40,000 advertisements per day on average to the typical American consumer. And of those 35 to 40,000 advertisements, people need to make, you know, several thousand decisions per day. Where do you think you fit into that mix if all you're doing is advertising? But if you put out some valuable content, you get in front of people, you show them how you're adding value to their lives. And I hate using that buzzword value, but like, think of it as, I'm going to make your life better, easier, and more profitable by watching and consuming my content. And if I can do that for you, then you're going to reciprocate by following me, by getting involved on my page, by maybe opening my message when I am ready to do that call to action. That's the difference. And so I think if you want to get people to know, like, and trust you, first get them to know you by creating captivating content that they're going to want to engage with. And then they're going to like you when you establish yourself as an authority figure that's really just looking to help other people and not necessarily looking for them to hire you. And then they trust you in the consistency of it all because you've been there. It's Old Faithful. I can rely on you. You can sure as hell rely on me. When you open up Instagram and Facebook and you're in the Atlanta area, you're going to see my face. That's why I can't go anywhere in public now without people recognizing me. And it happened in a couple of years because I'm in your face. It's annoying. My hustle is annoying. My grind on social media is annoying. And it should be. That's how you get in people's faces. But guess what? They're not going to forget me.
Yeah. So let's take a step back. So I think from an you know, marketing, networking, advertising, you know, we could talk about that for that's a whole show right there. One of the main things I wanted to get out of you today was really about your mindset, because I speak to lawyers not only every day, all day, but I also have had, you know, done over 120 podcasts at this point. And I'm telling you without blowing smoke, and you know this, you're incredibly unique and your mindset is freaking powerful. So I want to talk to, because the lawyers that are listening to you talk about of educating and entertaining and putting out, you know, doing all this stuff. Like, they can't even get like to the front of doing any of this stuff because their mindset is, I've got work to do. I've got to crank out hours. I've got the billable. And we know that that's a short-term vision of the future. So let's talk about your mindset and let's talk about the future of law and how that aligns. Go.
So,
right.
Let me do this first.
Sure.
If you haven't followed my page, if you haven't checked me out at CEO Lawyer on Instagram yet, then I invite you to check out my page. You don't have to follow me unless you feel like it's actually valuable to you. I'm not going to get offended. I want you to look at my page and see how my posts differentiate from other people. Why you think I'm winning at this social media game compared to everyone else in my industry as a personal injury attorney. The biggest law firms in Georgia are spending $10 million a year in advertising, and we're blowing them out of the water in terms of our unbelievable growth trajectory, the amount of cases that we're signing up, the amount of revenue that we're closing, because we're playing in a game that they're not competing in. We're competing in 2030 and they're playing in 2010. So by the time they figure out what's happening, it's already way too late and I'm already on to the next thing. So let me talk a little bit about mindset. My mindset is, first, as a business owner, I run my law firm like a business. I don't run it like a law practice. I'm not looking to litigate every single case to fluff my ego. Most of you as personal injury lawyers are advertising to other lawyers. When you start saying you're a registered trial attorney, bar certified, litigator, dude, no one cares about that. You know what people care about? That they can trust you and that you can get them the most amount of money as quickly as possible. That's what people care about. So 4 years ago, I was dead broke. I was living in an apartment with a friend of mine, paying $300 a month in rent, running my law firm from the trunk of my car. So this is not too far removed when I know the value of making that extra $5 or $10. I'm still that same kid that was plugging tires at age 8 at my dad's mechanic shop, and just so I can make that quick few bucks. You know, if a car came in and I tried to sell them on one used tire, I wanted to upgrade them to all four. I literally changed with my bare hands over 20,000 sets of tires before I became 18, before I turned 18. So I know what it's like to do real manual labor. And most of you as attorneys and as professionals don't realize how good you have it. You know why? Because you're only hanging around other lawyers. Stop hanging around other lawyers. Go hang around car salesmen. Go hang around real estate agents. Go hang around roofers and people that are actually working and hustling to get these clients in and to work with their bare hands. And then you'll realize how much harder other people need to work. And with real manual back-breaking labor compared to you. And then tell me that you can't be thankful and grateful for the opportunity to work as an attorney.
Well, or the idea that they're saying how busy they are. They're so busy billing hours. And I'm not denying that there aren't lawyers that are super. I work with the lawyers that are billing 60 hours a week, but it's because they're taking in the work that other people are going and hustling for, and they're doing the manual labor of the legal work in this case. They're not going out and getting business and generating their lifestyle, their future lifestyle. They're just cranking out the work that comes their way, and it's unpredictable, and it's not really what gives you balance in your life or gives you real. Like, I just wrote an article called "Don't Do What You Love to Do, Do What You Love to Do for Other People," and the whole point of that was that you need to have your own clients so you can work with those clients and get the satisfaction of changing lives, not just cranking out work. So I don't know how that works within what you're saying, but I'm.
Look, you have to realize whether you own a business or whether the business owns you. You have to determine whether you're self-employed or you just have a high-paying job. Okay, I'm not saying one is better than the other. You just have to have a real reflection and analyze what's actually happening in your organization. Most lawyers just have high-paying jobs where they're self-employed. And here's the litmus test. If you can take 3 months off and your income doesn't change, then you own a real business. Otherwise, you're most likely just self-employed. Now, I'm not saying I have a flourishing, well-oiled machine that just works like butter. We're getting there. We're improving every single day. But as a business owner, if you want to build a lifestyle where you don't have to be involved every single day, naturally, you need to delegate and fire yourself from the tasks that are not worth your time. So if you're a solopreneur or you just have 1 to 5 employees, look at how you've categorized their work. Some of those employees are not necessary. Some of them, you put them in there just because, I really like this person, or I want to, you know, have them in my organization, or they're just really, really cheap, and so I can afford them. I despise cheap employees. I run away from them like the plague. Because I've learned, and you will quickly learn, that one great employee is better than 3 to 5 mediocre ones. And depending on the value of your business and the size of your transactions, one great employee will make you more than 3 to 5 employees that are mediocre ever could. So in the natural progression of becoming a business owner to going from as a salesperson or self-employed to that entrepreneur that's building a business, you need to first learn how to delegate all of the low-level tasks. Things that are not worth your time, that don't require much critical thinking and advanced knowledge. You don't need to be that educated to scan a document and save it to a file. You don't need to be that educated to put together my mail and send it out and put a stamp on it. You don't need to have that much skill to organize my files alphabetically. You don't need to have that much skill to clean up the office and just be around and offer water, tea, coffee, whatever, you know, whatever tickles your fancy to people that come into the office. You don't have to be that educated to send out a group bulk message or a bulk email. You know, you do have to have critical thinking skills if you're trying to convince a client to hire your firm or to hire you as an attorney. That's not a low-level task. And most of you have the wrong person answering the phones when it should be you. I was handling my own calls up until I was bringing in 60, 70 cases a month on my own. And then I had to build a 7-person intake department just to be able to keep up with the volume. And just now, finally, we're getting to a point where 7 people can literally do the work that I was doing myself, but better. So delegate the low-level tasks. Make sure you know what's a low-level task and what isn't. Fire yourself every step of the way. Fire yourself from that which you were doing the day before. That's the only way you can grow. And if you want to know what's not worth your time, calculate the value of your time. It's the amount of hours you worked last year and the amount of money that you made last year. Divide the amount of money by the amount of hours. You made 200 grand last year. You worked 2,000 hours. Your time's worth $100 an hour. If all you do is $12, $15 an hour tasks, you can never outpace your time. You have 168 hours a week. If you want to sleep 7 or 8 hours a night, you have 90 to 100 hours or so left in the week. Let's take some commute time. We got to eat. We got to take care of ourselves. You can grind it out at 70 to 80 hours a week and be just fine. But if all you're doing is low-level tasks, you're going to stay and you're going to feel like you have that glass ceiling. So delegate first. Fire yourself from that which is not worth your time, or so that you can focus on things that are better for your organization. And third, do a business audit. Look at the quality of your clients. Are you taking everything that walks in the door? Or are you actually calculating the amount of time you're going to spend on this particular case, comparing it to how much your time is actually worth, and forcing yourself to grow? Because you can't work 170 hours a week. You can only work as much time as you're awake, realistically, right? And you don't want to cut out sleep. Sleep's important. You got to eat, right? You got to survive. So if you want to grow, you got to start cutting out some of those clients that are not worth your time. And if you're taking hourly work at, you know, $250 an hour, it's like, oh, well, it's okay. As long as I'm making $250 an hour, I don't care. What about all the time to set up that file and all the additional work that you're not monetizing and you're not profiting from? Then what? And at $250 an hour, can you afford to hire another attorney to do that same work for you? And will they do it at the same level in confidence and competence? And then what if they end up quitting and they decide to take those clients, that book of business with you? Then what? You've built a good paying job for yourself. And it's so totally okay to do that for 20, 30, 40 years. But if you want that financial freedom, you have to follow those 3 steps. Delegate, fire yourself, audit your business, make sure that you're getting high quality clients that you really want and that are pushing you to grow. And if that means increasing your prices to phase out some of the lower dollar clients because they don't fit within your organization, that's what you need to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's all goes to your initial point of this has to be run like a business. And the saying in business is if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And most people aren't taking the time to measure anything, their hours, their time, their money, none of it. So they just go along year after year thinking everything's fine when in reality, it probably isn't.
That which gets measured gets improved. So don't expect your weight to go down physically if you're not weighing yourself and measuring and keeping track of what you're consuming. Same thing with your income, same thing with the amount of clients you bring in, same thing with how you're managing your employees. You have to measure them. And you don't need some fancy organization and some, you know, some advanced chart, right, to keep track. Focus on the fundamentals. What do we care about? How many clients did we bring in today? How many clients did we bring in this month? How many calls did we make? How many clients did we lose? What was our revenue numbers like? You know, those are key performance indicators. You start with just the first couple and then add a little bit more to it over and over and over again. But most of us just put everything into one pile and say, look, I'm just a lawyer. I'm going to, you know, put it all together in one pile and think I'll do everything that's required. And then I'll have one paralegal that basically handles everything else. That's not a real business. That's relying on your paralegal to do attorney work. That's not a sustainable model.
So let me just recap. So we've talked about some key elements with social media. We've talked about some key elements with monetizing your business and making sure it's running like a business. But the other piece that we want to hit before we wrap up our 30 is about mindset, and we talked about mindset earlier, but you have a very unique mindset of how you stay positive and how you function at a very high level. Can you talk to that for a few minutes?
Yeah. So if you've ever traveled to a third world country, then you know people don't have it as good as you have it in the United States. Okay. They have to work a lot harder for a lot longer to get a fraction of what you can get like that. So I have a lot of family members that are overseas that don't have US citizenship. They're very similar to me. A lot of them are smarter, better looking. They're more physically fit and active. They literally have everything that I have except for opportunity. So when I come back to the US and I see that this is still a country where you can work 2 full-time jobs at minimum wage and save up money by living below your means for a couple of years and be able to buy a house and a car and basically everything else that you need and take care of all of your financial needs from working minimum wage or just like, you know, basic jobs, it really makes you think, how can I fail in this kind of organization? How can I fail in this kind of system? If you've traveled and you've seen other people, but if all you've seen is just what's in this little bubble and this microcosm of, well, you know, the government doesn't want to help us out and, you know, COVID really set us back. No, those are just excuses. Exposed you. COVID exposed your business and exposed your vulnerabilities. And if you were on the way out, then it just expedited it. And if you were on the way up, then it expedited that as well. So I encourage people to travel and see how other people are living. I lived in China. I lived in Mexico. I lived in Brazil. I've lived in all these different countries. And I'm telling you, if people in other countries work 70, 80 hours a week regularly, and no matter what they do for the rest of their lives, they cannot afford to buy a house. And you can do that with all these government funds and FHA loans and everything else. You can't not be grateful. You have to be grateful. You have to be thankful. So for me, it's disrespectful if I don't put in the work and I don't put in the effort every single day, because there's people that would literally die. And you can see that from the people that were just stuck on that plane leaving Afghanistan and falling to their deaths. There are people that would literally die to be in this country. And you want to sit here and complain about what the president is doing. Man, forget me with all that nonsense. I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
Okay. You have the most opportunities that you could ever possibly want right here. It's not a perfect system, but it's one of the best. All you need to do is just get to work, cut out the laziness, stop trying to keep up with the Joneses, minimize your lifestyle a little bit so that you can slowly catch up, learn how to save, cut out all of the unnecessary luxuries, and get to work. I promise you, in 2 to 3 years' time, your life will be drastically different. If you turn off the TV and open up a book, once a week, once a month, I promise you it's going to change things. And that's it. You have all the opportunities right here. So in my mind, I feel like I'm not doing enough. I wake up every morning and I feel like, man, I could have done better the other day. I don't feel like I'm working enough. I really don't. But I know that I'm building something for my wife and my family. And I don't want to get this twisted, guys. I take a lot of vacations. I spend a lot of time with my wife. I get to see my family whenever I want. I have decent relationships with friends because they're not too many friends, but the ones that I do have are closely knit and closely tied to me. I enjoy myself, but when it's time to work, it's time to work. And most of you care so much about that work-life balance. It's more just, where does my life go and how does work sort of fit into it, when it should be, how do I plant myself and build that foundation for the next 10 to 20 years? And if I have to make some short-term sacrifices for long-term gain and get that delayed gratification, then that's what I need to do. If you're happy, that's okay. If you're not complaining about your finances and everything is great, then this doesn't apply to you. But if you're not happy with your finances or your lifestyle or the way things are, then I promise you, most of it is because you just need that mindset shift.
But that's it. You just nailed it. That there's a discomfort with making a change in the short term to affect the long term. People would rather not make that change, whether that's health, whether that's business, whether that's whatever. It's just easier to just kind of stay with what's going on.
That's exactly why the social media is working.
Yeah.
That's exactly, I've been saying it for years. No one is going to take money away from something that is working and put it into something that's speculative. social media has always been speculative until I came around and proved otherwise. But I didn't have a choice. I couldn't afford to be in billboards and radio and TV. So I just started boosting ads for my phone for $5 a piece. Boom, 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 boom. And now we spend $250,000 a month. Next year, we'll spend $500,000 a month. And the year after that, we'll outspend the number one law firms in Georgia. And the year after that, we will be number one in Georgia. That's what's going to happen.
But the point is that the short, you sometimes have to have some short-term struggle and change in chasing after what you desire to get the long-term effects. And many lawyers sitting back listening to this, they haven't made that move yet. They're still in the weeds. They're still in the quicksand and the muck and the mire. And at some point, every lawyer is going to have to make a decision because the future of law is changing. And I did a survey on LinkedIn about it. Like all these things are happening, AI, the deregulation of law firms, all these things coming up the pike, and lawyers are sitting around just kind of dealing with what's in front of them every day, not thinking about the future. But I think you've nailed it in that point that you've got to take some short-term moves to get the long-term effects.
You're 100% correct in that they need to get out of their comfort zone, but you also need to be willing to try things that are uncertain. And I think what we like is comfort, but what we thrive on is certainty. And if you allow yourself a little bit of discomfort, you still might want to hold on to that certainty, but you need to be willing to try things that are uncertain when there is potential for massive success. And right now, if you continue to do the same things over and over again, expect different results, you're going to wake up one day and realize it's just not working anymore. And you're going to have to shut down and go work for someone or really drastically change everything that's going on. But if you start taking 5% of your time, 10% of your time now, putting it into uncertain things, and uncertainty could literally be in stock market, real estate, crypto, whatever, you know, I say social media, I say spend some time creating content and building a brand. You only need 50 to 100 true loyal followers to make a dent in any sort of market. That's where you need to start.
Beautiful. Well, Ali, thank you so much for all your wisdom and your passion and your drive. Let's take a few minutes and hit the three best of. How does that sound?
Let's do it.
All right, man. So Atlanta, I haven't been to Atlanta in a long, long time. What's your favorite play? You're going to go out and have a night out. You're going to have a great meal. Where are you headed?
First thing is don't pronounce the second T in Atlanta.
That's it? It's Atlanta?
It's Atlanta. Yeah, no, they're going to know you're not from here.
All right.
No one says, what is it? Hotlanta either. I did one of my ads a few years ago. It said Hotlanta. And everyone's Hotlanta. Like, yeah. So where's a good place to eat?
Yeah,
man. So there is so much great food in Atlanta. It really depends on what you like, but we've got some really good Southern food here. So I would encourage you to try Southern food. There are a lot of different restaurants, but it's really by geographic. Geographically, if you're in South Atlanta, like around the airport in that Southern area, or West Atlanta, that's where you're going to get some good fried chicken, some collard greens, some mashed potato. You're going to get some good Southern food. And then if you go up north, like in a Duluth area, up I-85, the best Korean food that you can get, Korean barbecue, Korean everything. And then there's some restaurants that combine the two. There's one place that I really like. It's called, now I'm going to forget, but it's literally attached to a convenience store. It looks like just some rinketing place, but it combines Korean cuisine with Southern food and hospitality. And they've just got some amazing food. So you really can't go wrong in Atlanta. Just depends on, you know, what you're looking for.
Okay. So I'm going to plan on eating some good Southern food and Korean food. What are some other things? I'm coming. There's one thing I have to do in Atlanta when I'm visiting. What is that?
One thing that you have to do when you come and visit Atlanta, I don't want to say all the normal touristy stuff like the Coca-Cola factory and like the aquarium and all, because everyone does that. I think checking out a game at the Braves Stadium in Atlanta, you know, baseball game,
yep,
and then kind of wandering around that area for food It's North Atlanta. It's not downtown, but it's kind of like a safer and up and coming area. Or checking out the Beltline, like spending a day just riding a bicycle or renting out one of those little scooters on the Beltline and stopping by and just trying out all those little, those great mom and pop shops and ice cream stores and things like that. Especially if you go to, there's one area. See, now I'm not, so there's Krog Street Market, K-R-O-G, Krog Street Market is probably what I would say is a go-to, and it's attached to the Beltline. It's okay. On the other side of town from the Brave Stadium, but it just depends on what your style is, right? Do you like to just sit, relax, watch a game, or do you want to be in the city, in Atlanta, and get a vibe for the culture? So Krog Street is definitely one of those spots, especially if you like to eat.
Okay. I like all that. I'm game. Yeah. Definitely. And what are people in Atlanta doing now? Like what's a hot thing that people, I mean, other than it being hot, what are the, some of the things that are, that people enjoy doing that that's an activity that's hot right now?
A lot of people are moving in. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
You know, I think a very popular activity really in Atlanta is going to Lake Lanier or going to, Ackworth Beach, which is like another, Carter's Lake. There's two major lakes sort of in Georgia, Metro Atlanta. And so just spending a day on the lake and checking out the boats and checking out all the houses there, especially if you go for like 4th of July or Labor Day or something like that, that's definitely an experience. But people are just trying to chill by the pool and go to the lake in Atlanta right now in the wintertime, in the summertime. So
nice.
Yeah, that's where you'll find most Atlanta folks.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to make a journey down there and visit with you and check out some of that great food and scenery and all that. But listen, Ali, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your wisdom and your attitude and your mindset. I think, being a young attorney, there's a lot of attorneys, even older attorneys, 40s and 50s, that could learn a lot from just listening to you and your attitude and the way that you look at business and the business of law. And just really appreciate you taking some time for doing the show.
I appreciate it, my friend. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. And hey, everybody, thank you for spending some time today with us. And, you know, hopefully you're getting a step closer every time you listen to this show to being that lawyer, someone who's confident, organized, and a skilled rainmaker. Take care, be safe, be well.
Thanks for listening to Be That Lawyer. Life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Visit Steve's website, Fretzen.com, for additional information and to stay up to date on the latest legal business development and marketing trends. For more information and important links about today's episode, check out today's show notes.